Hi, Wanju. Hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and creators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Mbulu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Co-writer and actor Archie Lush, director Alex Power, and producer Mark Zanisov take us to the streets of Fremantle, Western Australia, where their short film Blunt pushes us into the simmering heat of the kitchen. Under the spatter of duck fat and the glint of sharp knives is the mounting pressure of being a top-tier chef, a notion that's amplified by Archie Lush's emerging culinary creative in a need to try and save his father's struggling restaurant. Shot with vivid realisation from one of Australia's finest emerging talents, cinematographer James Dudfield, and edited with precision by Hamish Patterson, Blunt is a rapid-fire short that immerses you in the world of fine dining in a way that'll scratch that itch between seasons of The Bear. In the following interview, Archie and Alex and Mark talk about shooting in Frio, the importance of having stylistic and stunning food for a film about food, as created by key food stylist Yara Aruda, and where they each see their creative journeys going over the coming years. They also talk about the dedication and visual talent that exists within James Dudfield as well. Blunt is currently heading out on the festival circuit, so keep an eye out for it when it appears near you. If you want to find out more about what we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au, where you can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Blue Sky at thecurb.au. Links are in the show notes. We're a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. If you visit patreon.com/thecurb.au, you can support us from as little as $1 a month. If you aren't able to financially support us, then that's okay. Please consider sharing this interview with your film-loving friends. We'd also love it if you could rate and review us on a podcast player of your choice. Every review helps amplify the interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. Right, here's the trailer for Blunt, followed by my chat with co-writer and actor Archie Lush, director Alex Power, and producer Mark Zanisov.
All of you have talent, but that's not enough. What we're looking for is genius.
You know, you might actually enjoy having a real job.
Real job.
Alex, tell us about what your role with Blunt is.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for having us. I'm Alex Power. I was lucky enough to jump on as director for this film, Blunt, this short film that we shot in Fremantle last year. So I got to pretty much take the script that Archie and Louis wrote and kind of bring it to life with the team of collaborators that we kind of wrangled together over a short period of time, to be honest. It was quite a quick whirlwind of a film in the grand scheme of things. But yeah, it was kind of amazing. We got to all sink our teeth into a project that we cared about deeply and got to make it in an area that we also cared about deeply in Fremantle. So it kind of had multiple factors of inspiration going on at once, which was nice.
Nice. We'll talk about Fremantle a bit later on, but I'll throw to you, Archie. It's the actor and co-writer. If you want to introduce yourself.
Yeah. So I'm Archie. I wrote this with my best friend, Louis, about 2 years ago. And I don't think we came to a completed script until week before shooting. We met with many, many people about who was going to be best fit to bring this story to life. And just so happened that Alex also lived in the heart of Frio. And he had everything that we were looking for in terms of the energy and love and soul to put into this film. And also, everyone seemed to know the guy. So it really helped with bringing everyone together and to make this film what it became.
Mark, as well, as a person who helps bring it all together, can you talk about your role with Blunt?
Yeah, for sure. No, thanks for having us, as Alex said. Yeah, I'm Mark Zanisov. I produced Blunt, and I guess what I really did in the end is manage their creative vision, manage the stress between the creativity and the actual, making it real. And you know, as most producers do, was holding that bucket with full of holes and trying to cover as many gaps as I can so not all the water flows out. but that's kind of it. And, you know, between obviously, you know, schedules and money and all the boring stuff that no one wants to hear about film, I did all that. And then obviously I helped these guys make the amazing film that we have, Blunt.
Archie, I'd love to talk about the foundation of the script. What was the initial concept? Where did your drive to tell this particular story come from?
I'd always had a drive to make this script in particular. It was from a feeling rather than knowing what story to tell, first and foremost. I wanted to create the film not just because I wanted to express how I felt working in this industry or trying to make it in this industry, but also how so many of my friends and the community around me and friends of friends felt. Because being in this industry and doing what I do and what so many of us do is a grueling and sometimes obsessive career to take. And being in the flow of things in Perth, especially where it's all a little more quiet, it's all a little more isolated, I felt so bogged down with things, and I felt that there were no paths to take that were the right paths. And first and foremost, there was no projects being made there, so I was like, I'm going to have to make something. And I thought, why not express the feelings that I have and translate into a film? Whether that's the most, you know, whether that's the most confusing and Christopher Nolan film, no, it's more of a expressing something that has a very simple feeling and soul in it, and expressing that in the most sort of beautiful way possible. So I think that's where it came from in me.
As a bit of a calling card too, the visual style of food and preparation, there is an inherent drama to it, and there's an inherent artistry
100%.
To it. If you,
yes,
it, maybe you all want to add on this, but Archie, I guess if you want to bounce off that, the visual language of food.
So 100%. That's where it all came from. We Louis and I talked, and I explained how I felt, and we didn't want to be that cliche, let's make a film about actors, because in the end, that's not what we wanted to do. From the get-go, that's not what we wanted to do. It wasn't all about that. It was how this is a universal feeling and can be applied to so many different careers. And I grew up cooking with my dad, so I felt very close to cooking. And I felt also that I'd worked in many restaurants, and I knew the stress behind working in a packed restaurant. And I knew the bear was on an uprise. COVID was just happening, and everyone was getting used to filming in their kitchens. Everyone was filming them cooking, and it seemed to be like everyone was shifting towards loving to see people cook, because everyone does it. And we thought becoming a chef and trying to get to the top seems like an impossible task. And we found it pretty much translates quite perfectly into lots of different career pathways. And we felt it's a very universal, but visually, it visually translated so well. Using food, using kitchens, using the stress and environment and atmosphere of a restaurant. We felt it translated it really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think like what Archie and Louis did with the script is kind of genius in the way that, you know, it is a universal thing, like what he's saying. But I think what cooking is as well is this kind of interesting cross-section of an industry that, you know, it is an art form, but it is also kind of a service industry as well. So it's one of those things that you can have such a range of a career within that industry. And, you know, add the fact that we all love food, like there's no one in the world who doesn't. So when you add that element in, plus like the kind of, you know, almost sexiness of what food can be on screen, it kind of is this winning, for lack of a better term, ingredients to kind of come together and show what the feeling is, what those boys were kind of feeling at the time. So it's, yeah, it's a good vehicle for a metaphor, I think.
Yeah,
that's
love
why shows like the bear work.
Yeah, I love that we shot with food. I was salivating most of the shoots. I think it was probably my favorite shoot in the past while, because, you know, you're sitting there and you've got 7 plates of you know, deliciousness in front of you. So, you know, I loved it, and I loved the journey with these guys. That
we also got to eat a lot of it, which was fun. So like when we stopped shooting, we got to kind of stop and be like, all right, who wants to eat this beautiful filet mignon or whatever the hell we were eating? And so that was kind of
we had the most amazing food stylist as well, who I'd never worked with before, and I'm sure a few of us had probably never worked with before.
I don't think she'd ever worked in film either, so it was very
nice.
She
also never worked in film.
But that was the best part, actually. She just T-hopped straight onto it, didn't she? It was,
yeah.
Yara was, I think she was the backbone of us all, where, you know, we would be eating the unit food and she'd be over there preparing some gorgeous, I don't know,
Michelin-style food.
Going, when do we eat this? And, you know, it was great. But, no, she was awesome.
And, you know, it made the rap party a plus. She did a huge like barbecue and spread, and it was amazing. So she was fantastic, and it made the film what it was.
So how quick was it to do the shoot? What was your turnaround time frame for that?
Oh, I really stretched these guys. Made them rush like I do. No, I think I made a pretty tight timeline, and then you know, we can go from there. I think the biggest aspect of the film is obviously the development and then the, you know, writing the script and tightening bits and bobs here. But once we got into pre-production, I think it took us a month of pre-production, and then 6 days to shoot, and then maybe 2.5 months of post, if that, and then straight onto the festival. So yeah, really nice turnaround from these guys. And I think with the timeline that I kind of set, and you know, how hard I pushed them, they did so well. I was like incredibly impressed by, I don't know, all their creativity and how you know, how intense it was with everything. So I'm really glad we actually made it like from pre-production to post, how fast it was, because it kind of it let us, I don't know, stay in that mindset of blunt in a way, while, you know, yeah. I there's a lot of short films that take longer and, you know, take a lot more ideas. We kind of stayed in that mindset. I mean, I know like we were all talking about it from like all the way from the pre-production all the way to the end of post-production, and it was just that one project that you're just straight hammering it over that time period, which was really, really exciting.
Having the tight turnaround was super helpful for me as well. I don't know, I've done a bunch of short films in the past that really do stretch out, and they really do kind of, because it's a passion project, a lot of short films are passion projects. So a lot of them, it is kind of, the timeline is on you to set. And if you don't kind of set it, you know, within reason, you can kind of get lost in it. And so what Mark is saying, keeping in that kind of mental space of just living in this story was kind of perfect for what we needed to do, because we could pump it out so quickly, because normally these things take much longer than what we kind of managed. So yeah, it was good to have Mark on our back, or he's been like, hey, when's this happening, what's happening here, what's happening here. It was also because we were all moving and doing different stuff, so it was like there was a lot of chaos involved in the post-production side of things, just because I was moving, you know, to America and Archie to Canada. So it was like a lot of different moving parts that Mark kind of had to wrangle us constantly, and I was very appreciative. I think at one point I said to him, I was like, Mark, please know you are not being annoying. I want you to remind me and yell at me as much as you can, because that's what's going to get this sorted.
For legal purposes, there was no yelling and there was no need from me. No, but I love these guys. And I think, like, yeah, working around their timetable was actually really great for me as a producer, because I really had to get in there and sometimes remind them. But it was good because for me, it was a great learning experience. Like, I guess, you know, how to manage that over different time zones. For example, we were doing post, you were in New York, I was here, RT's, you know, all around Europe. It was really interesting getting all that organized.
He really was the glue that kept this whole ship together. Ever since he came on to the project, since he reached out and said, "Hey, this is great. Here's my pitch. Hear me out." And we saw him, and ever since he became part of this project, every day was a new task. Not just because he's setting them, but because we're having these conversations and going, right, what needs to be done? And I think there were, from funding, which took 6 months, maybe six or seven months, every single day of those 6 or 7 months was in my, because I'd graduated school, so between work and home, it was work and Blunt. And while I was at work, I was thinking about Blunt. So the entire 7 months was thinking, how are we going to make enough money for this film? And every single day was, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? What can I do? So it really was. And then as soon as we got into proper pre-production, then we really turned up the accelerator and then even more so then. So, yeah, we were really just living in the Blunt space for a good year.
With that in mind, like, your mindset stuck in Blunt, I imagine you probably then have a real clear understanding of what the economy of what you're actually working with and what you're actually able to achieve to put on screen. And what I'm talking about is, like, there is the scene where he's got to go and do the, I would call an audition. It's not an audition, but it's like him trying to work alongside a whole bunch of other people to get in a place. And the framing of that is beautifully shot, because we don't actually go into the kitchen with him. Instead, we're outside.
Yep.
And it's a brilliant cut from daytime to night. And it's beautifully framed. But we don't have to go in there. We know that a huge amount of time, huge amount of stress has gone in there. So that economy of knowing what you're working with in a short form is in that
100%.
Scene. Is that what you're thinking 100%. About?
100%. Yeah. Definitely. From the get-go, we wanted that. That's obviously a very pivotal moment. But from the get-go, we know that you have to work with your limitations, and we know that this is a short film. And to have an entire new scene with a completely new location, because that wasn't a kitchen, to have... It'd probably be an extra 5 pages, maybe 6 extra pages. It's not possible, and we don't have the days for it, the money for it, the crew for it, the food for it, and the brain space for it. So it was a pretty easy thing to say, right, this happens, and Louis and I, it was probably a half a second decision. We're not showing that, right? Yeah, we're not showing that. Cool. Let's move on. That was it.
Yeah. Did you know that it would look as effective as it did in the edit then?
No, not at all. I didn't know it was going to look that cool, but in the script, there was always a jump cut. It was always going to be a jump cut from daylight to nighttime. But obviously, if it was me shooting this thing, it would have looked like a potato shot. And I know that if none of these guys came on, it wouldn't have looked like that. So,
our DP, James, we were super lucky when we did shoot this shot, because obviously we had to shoot it in the morning to get the day and then the evening to get the night. And the camera we were using, we were able to kind of frame it up and then match the frame. So we were kind of seeing it in camera on the day shooting, which was really nice to see, because normally you don't get to see any kind of editing while you're shooting. So just seeing that flick between, and we could manually do it, and we were kind of all just standing at this camera. I think it was like 3 a.m. or something, just losing our minds, yeah. Just being like, yeah. Oh my god, it works. And also, like, weirdly enough, again, like, one of those serendipitous moments is the blue light that you kind of see in that nighttime shot was, we didn't know that existed until we got there, and so it kind of created this perfect hue that already kind of tied into a lot of the other scenes, especially the one that follows right after that. So there's a lot of kind of moments throughout this whole thing that just kind of worked on the day, and, you know, someone was stepping down and I was being like, yeah, they need this win right now.
I think that perfectly encapsulates a lot of the film, is a lot of happy accidents, because there were so many happy accidents, whether it was with, you know, lights in places where we didn't think, or just locations or people that were just immensely helpful in the end. It was a lot of happy accidents. And I guess that's how a short film like this is made. With a lot of happy accidents, so
insane. And though, there was a lot unhappy accidents too.
A lot didn't go.
We had blackouts, and you know, homeless people disrupting the set a lot. So there was
and crashes. Oh, we had 2 car crashes in Fremantle. God,
but that's a quiet area. Like where you're shooting is.
Yeah.
Well, we shot on Main Street at one point. Like there's not too much of it. We kind of cut it in the edit, but there was a more of a scene where Archie's kind of standing on, I think it's like the main drive, pretty much the coffee strip of Fremantle. And it was like, I think a Sunday night at like 8 p.m. and it was just pumping. There was so many people going, walking around, and this kind of drunk homeless person kind of was, you know, wanted to come and chat essentially and didn't want to leave.
With his face.
So it was a lot of, a lot of aggression and kind of, what are you doing here type thing. So we kind of had to,
I think my favorite thing from like after shooting specifically in Main Street was looking at the photos afterwards that we got from just us as behind the scenes, where it was, I think, 40 people crammed into one invisible square at the traffic light, because we had the limitations of spread across the whole thing. So it was literally a wide frame, and it was just 40 people crammed into this one little invisible space. It was honestly hilarious when you see it. So
let's talk about James, because James is he's a great cinematographer. He's somebody who's really, you know, really making a mark in DOP world at the moment. What was it like working with him and getting him to be on the film and seeing what his visual style is like as well?
James, to me, is like a mad genius when it comes to this stuff. Like, I'll be like talking about a shot or a frame and being like, oh yeah, I want to, you know, we'll frame it up like this and this angle or whatever. And he'll be like, oh, like the shot from the 1974 Kubrick movie or whatever it is. And he'll just like, he'll just spit out the most perfect reference that I won't even know. And he'll be like, oh, this one. And I'll be like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So he has this kind of inherent knowledge and understanding of film first and foremost before even camera comes into it. So I think that's like all the cinematographers I've worked in the past are like, you know, they're filmmakers to their core, you know, it's such like the kind of scientific technical side of filmmaking that most of them that I know and love are all like these deep cinephiles who just understand the construction of cinema in such a deep understanding. So, and James is that, like, he's also like a really insane gaffer. So I think having that knowledge coming into becoming a DP is really beneficial, because he has such an understanding of light that maybe some DPs don't have, because they haven't had to gaff. But I mean, a lot of DPs do come from gaff backgrounds, but James just loves light, and he just loves how light works, and he can like see it in a different way. And I just, It's a marvel to watch. He often gets stuck though, wanting to gaff and DP at the same time. So I'm like, James, use your people that you have, because
a one man crew.
He could literally be a one man crew. I mean, he couldn't, because we had so many incredible people to help it. But it's like, yeah, he's such a great person to work with.
But that's the nature of you know, independent films, short films in particular. You often have, you're wearing multiple different hats. Each of you have different roles that you're encompassing. And James is no different. Like, I've seen enough of his work to know his, as you're saying, the light, the way that he loves light and the way that he shoots Fremantle and Inside the Kitchen is just phenomenal. It's lovely to see. So let's talk about shooting down in Fremantle. You've already kind of talked about that, but was it always a choice to kind of be down there as the place to be and putting that particular, you know, slice of Fremantle on screen as well?
It's where we grew up, and it's where so much art happens. And the city of Fremantle has so much character in it like I've never seen before. Obviously, you go to little towns in Europe and you get more character, but we, unfortunately, in the middle of Perth, it's one of the most incredible little towns, and it's got so much heart, so much of Louis and I's heart tied into it, and so many of the crew. And so it seemed like a no-brainer to film mainly in Fremantle. We were just saying, you know, we had a few locations when we were writing saying this isn't in Fremantle, but it's no one's going to know. But we actually ended up filming this entire film in Fremantle, right?
I think yeah, so, yeah, and, just about.
Yeah, and so I love that. And I think it translates to film. I think that vibe and I think the artsy nature of Fremantle really translates into the film, which I like.
And then obviously the film hits the festival market. What was that like? What's that journey been like for you all?
Oh, I think it's been quite nice to see it made, first and foremost, obviously see the full film in effect. And it's been really good to obviously, you know, do this, I guess, and talk about it and you know, get the journey across and, you know, to people that haven't seen the film and, you know, we're hoping we'll see the film very soon. And maybe even, you know, filmmakers that are aspiring to make films like this or films in general. In terms of film festivals, we're very excited to get into quite a few that we're hoping, obviously. We're kind of waiting for a lot of selections here and there. But, you know, once the dates come through, we sure hope that we'll, you know, snag a few of the good ones, especially in, you know, America and kind of the, you know, that region, obviously, for Alex and Archie, a couple of in Australia for me, and maybe a few in Europe if we get lucky, for the European food lovers, you know, the cuisine lovers there. But yeah, I guess we're just waiting now, and it's a bit of a wait game, a bit of a, I guess, you know, a marketing game is what they call it. But you know, it's all just waiting and you know, spreading as much love about the film as we can in the meantime.
I was just gonna say, festivals are that interesting thing where it is just like you put all your work into a project and then you send it off and then you kind of just wait and you're at the whims of whoever is deciding those things. So we're kind of in that little interim stage of just waiting, which is daunting but also exciting. So yeah, it is good to kind of get to keep talking about it and let it live on through us regardless of what happens.
You're all Australian filmmakers and Australian storytellers, and even if you're not in Australia now, you know, your careers aren't going to be in Australia, you will always be an Australian storyteller. And for each of you, what does that mean? What does it mean to be able to tell Australian stories or even, you know, carry an Australian perspective to film or TV internationally?
No, for me, the more and more I travel and more I kind of create in different places and within Australia, but also internationally, it's like, we do have such a very distinct way of being that I think we all can feel inherently. And then when we travel, foreigners can feel so specifically, and we're told time and time again, which can be annoying. But in terms of bringing Australian stories, it's like, I think we have such a specific way of living that needs to be told in film. And I think now it's starting to get this momentum and things are happening more in the Australian industry. And I'm really excited to see more and more independent Australian stuff be made, whether it is on the big screen or for, you know, streamers or whatever that looks like. But yeah, I think without that and without seeing yourself growing up in Australia on screen, it's kind of hard to relate. I remember like, even recently, like watching Heartbreak High, like that was one of the first times where I was like, that's actually so close to my upbringing, you know, and I'd never had that experience. Or even like Love Me, the show that they shot in Melbourne, that I finally was, I'm finally starting to see myself and my my experiences on screen. And that's crazy to think that it's only really happening now, but I think it is this kind of modern swing of productions coming through. So I think that's what's important. It's that it's to be seen while you're watching yourself, if that makes sense.
I can't obviously speak for the rest of Australia, but I know for Perth, Perth is such, obviously being one of the most isolated city in the world. We have such a passionate group of people in Perth making films that they love, and just really, like, the industry in Perth is such a, it may not be the most successful one, but it's so passionate. And it's fueled by such a wide range of people of all ages. But I know the younger generation is really pushing forward with making their own things, because I think out of everyone, they know that not much is coming their way, so they don't have much of a choice, which in turn fuels so much creativity and so much being made there. And I think it's so important. And I think making films of high quality is going to be inspiring for other Perth filmmakers and other Australian filmmakers to say that, you know, things can be made in smaller places, but that can hold the same weight as things made in New York or something. And I also feel that Australian filmmakers and Australian artists and Australian actors and filmmakers, I think, and I've heard this from many people over here as well, they are known to be the most hardworking lot. And I do agree. And I think we just come from a place that is that pumps out a different breed of filmmakers. I think we are, and I'm, you know, I've seen it. There, people are, and especially just in this team, people are so hardworking, and it is very inspiring to see. And I think that is the strength of the Australian.
And I totally agree with this. Yeah, I totally agree with those two guys. Like, it is such a nice, tight community. And I think what I love particularly about it is, as an immigrant coming in and joining this tight community, especially in Perth, where, you know, everyone knows everyone, and it's a case of, like, you know, when you do something here, everyone knows about it. And that's so cool to see, where, you know, maybe in other places where it's bigger cities, where it's bigger productions, you're not always, you know, as connected possibly, because you're always, you know, doing your own thing, and there's a lot of projects and you've got your group. Here, your group is everyone, right? Like, you just don't have an option, I guess, especially in Perth, where you are filmmakers, right? You're not, you know, genre by genre kind of filmmakers or type by type. It is filmmakers. The commercial people do narrative, and the narrative people do commercial, and everyone does everything, really. And it's really beautiful to see. And I totally agree with the guys about, you know, being extremely hardworking, because we come from places like this where, you know, sometimes the you're working hard to get that one opportunity in a small spot. So when you go out to the big city, you know, whatever, you are, of course, going to be, you know, running for that top, and really loving the journey on the way, as you do, you know, here already. So it's great mindset, and I love it here.
Thanks again for listening to this chat with Archie Lush, Alex Power, and Mark Zanisov about their film Blunt. For other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review, and share this podcast with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'll see you on the next one.